fisted toward right. Look at that ball carry.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Warren, and this is the Other 15% podcast. This week on the show, we're going to be covering news of the last 2 weeks, followed by our in-depth discussion of the current baseball playoffs, and then finally, we'll wrap it up with Andy Dolan's terrible Netflix picks. Andy, how are you doing?
Just great. Is this where I'm supposed to say my tagline?
You're supposed to say, yeah, whatever. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm good. Oh, go ahead, Andy.
I actually got one. I'm going to pay just as much this year for Cup tickets as I did last year. Nothing.
Very good. And I'm Mike, and I have never once been correct about a postseason series prediction.
See, I have a similar track record, except I'm always wrong. So I guess I'm correct in reverse.
That's true. If you're betting the spread on my postseason series predictions and you bet against me every single time, you are a rich man or woman, my friend.
So we'll get to that in the second segment and all of our terrible predictions and how badly we did. But
all of your terrible predictions.
Well, yes.
Hey, yes. At least we put ourselves out on that island and made our predictions to be mocked and sneered at for the rest of the postseason.
Right, exactly. See, at least we had that. We had the strength of our convictions. Yeah, or something.
The stars that burn brightest burn for the shortest, Dolan. And that's how my predictions went. They burned bright and flamed out in the division series. Very cool.
But why is it that because mine were right, it means I didn't make them?
Well, it's because you're not one of us, and so that means you're not cool.
How about because you totally already fucked up our intro, so you get no credit for anything for the rest of the podcast. How about that?
Sorry, there goes your Emmy.
And I'm already angry at you because I can already tell your Netflix recommendation is going to suck.
All right, so we're
set up. Isn't that what you guys do?
Yeah, pretty much.
Opposite of whatever I pick.
Yeah. So one thing we've decided to do this week and probably weeks going forward, we're splitting the podcast up into segments. And this first segment, we have yet to come up with a decent name for it. For now, we'll call it the Leadoff Man, because
that's not trademarked, is it?
No, not at all.
So if you have any suggestions for our first segment, forward them to Twitter at hashtag #TheOther15, hashtag #LeadoffManSuggestions, hashtag podcast.com.
I think that'll use up all of the... okay, fine.
Oh, is that how Twitter works?
Yeah, 100 and whatever characters.
Damn it. Oh, yeah.
That's the reason
we're not gonna whoa, Dolan, you're
I don't care.
Hey, good start on the podcast, guys. Good start.
good clean. We all got out of the blocks clean.
And scene.
Yeah.
I'll just do it with the mic in the computer. How's that? Is that better?
Well, it sounds like you're at the bottom of a 55-gallon drum or something, but that's fine.
It sounds like you had a Dusty Baker sized stroke.
This is just going well. So any rate, first segment.
Somebody on Twitter offered to buy me a microphone, but I haven't gotten it yet.
Oh, so, that's nice of them.
Whenever they're ready to pony up, I'm ready to take.
You're ready to take it, pony. I don't know. News of the recent past, since we're not in a weekly, saying news of the week doesn't work. So news of the last 2 weeks,
we're
bi-monthly.
We'd like to experiment. I think all of our news of the week though is within the past week. So
I think most of it is. Yeah.
Well, can I go first then, Warren?
You can. That was going.
So
to,
my
was
big going news.
To go.
Yeah. Thank you. My big news of the week is just recently today, and loyal listener, I think the only loyal listener that we have so far, Lance pointed out that the Cubs, for the first time in quite some time, have actually lowered ticket prices for the 2013 season. An average of 2% lowering, with bleacher tickets on average being lowered by a 10% cut. So if you paid, like I did, like an idiot one time, $78 for a marquee bleacher seat last year, only $69 plus fees, bringing them right back up to approximately $78.
How much you want to bet the fees went up?
The fees went up.
Tickets actually cost more than they used to, but it's a price break.
And as Lance pointed out, what the Cubs will most likely do is jack up the price of bison dogs by 50 cents and make all that up in concessions. And then next year, they'll raise the price, or in 2014, they'll raise the prices. And then when everyone complains, they'll say, well, we lowered them in 2013. So Dolan, the zero that you spent on Cubs tickets in 2012.
I might double that next year.
You will be reduced. It will be 98% of zero.
Yep.
Nice.
It's about damn
or 90% if you want to sit by yelling.
No, so this might vaguely affect me. I don't know. I may be jumping on an aeroplane to take in a game next year. So we'll see.
Can I make a suggestion, Warren? This probably won't affect you if you wait to take that aeroplane till like August or September and buy your tickets off StubHub. When
when they'll be like 75 cents.
Yes,
so.
Those tickets should still be under a dollar, which they literally were at the end of this year.
Weren't they? What was it? What were they going for in the last home series? Weren't they going for like $1.50 or something?
I'm not even joking. Earlier, I didn't check for the last series, but I saw a couple times where tickets were no joke a quarter. And they were, I mean, sure, with the fees and stuff, you were probably paying $5 to $10 for a ticket. But literally, that's a free ticket.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's single A prices for a single A product.
No kidding. So tickets prices lowered. Wasn't there something else related to the ticket prices that? No, I guess I'm thinking of the firing of. Because I think we found out what was keeping them back for the past.
I do have something else on the season tickets before we get to the merciless way they treated their longtime employee.
Right.
There's a blogger out there who's well known for wasting a lot of money on bleacher seats and having to get to the games 3 hours before they start just so he can sit on the same little plank of wood that he always does.
My ears are burning.
On his blog, on your blog, Kerm, you posted what the actual season ticket holder price is for all the different tiers and how many games fall into that tier next year. It works out to the average, if you bought a season ticket for the bleachers, the average ticket is $38 a game to sit in the worst seats in the whole park, unless you're behind a pole. And I don't know if the guy's Polish or not. Anyway,
hey-o.
That comes to $3,000 a year. To sit in the bleachers. But the good thing about this unnamed blogger is he only needs one ticket. So it makes it a lot easier.
I think as I posted, I got actually somehow made it in the worst year possible to the top of the season ticket wait list this past year. And in looking at those packages, that by far the most, the most expensive one was the bleacher package.
Wow.
I shouldn't say that. Like, I mean, obviously, the most expensive one that an average person would consider that isn't like the scout seats was the bleachers.
Wow. Yeah. I'll have to.
Losers sit in the grandstand. I mean, who needs shade and a seat back? Real men sit out there and get skin cancer and sweat all over the next sweaty guy right next to him.
All for the love of the game. Yeah, that's why those bleacher seats. You know, they have the channels in them that run all the sweat down to the aisle. Troughs. You know, yeah, the troughs. Yeah, exactly. Oh yeah. So the other news that we alluded to is the Cubs are you know, they finally got rid of that last roadblock to winning the World Series. They fired their traveling secretary or something like that?
They fired George Costanza from the organization.
Oh, they did.
He's the assistant to the traveling secretary. He probably got promoted.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the traveling secretary. I mean, yeah. So I didn't actually read anything about this, and I don't actually care that. It sucks. I don't know. Is there a really big market for guys that are traveling secretaries? I don't know.
Well, if you didn't read anything about this and didn't really care, I'm glad you're in charge of this section of the news segment.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think this is another not a non-issue, but this is another. I have a feeling Theo Epstein hiring college buddies to fill these positions, which I'm totally fine with because I really don't think the traveling secretary.
let's all be honest. We'd do the same thing.
Right. Exactly. You guys are totally hired once I work my way up the club ladder.
Awesome. Am I going to be the guy that's going to be there with what's his face on the undercover boss?
Todd. Todd and I are going to hose down the crappers. That's our job.
So, in other news,
I got something about this too.
Oh, awesome! I need to from here on out. Whenever
some
I
some kind of signal,
I'm going to check with you first.
Here's what I don't get: I don't think the guy really got fired, because if he did, wouldn't Barry Rosner have written like a series of columns about how awful it is that the Cubs would take out their frustrations on some poor low-level employee? Or is he still writing? I don't remember the guy's name. Was it Dave Fierro or some kind of Fierro? It was a Pontiac Fierro. When he got fired.
Did he flame out? Is that what happened?
When he got fired as the trainer.
Oh, John Fierro.
Rosner wrote 15 columns about it. It's the most pointless thing. Yeah, John Fierro.
Yeah.
So I don't think Jimmy
Fierro got fired.
Because Rosner would come to his aid and write some tersely worded missives and fire those off. So I won't believe it till Rosner reports it.
Fierro hasn't been there since the 80s, right? I mean, and maybe I just haven't been paying enough.
Rosner hasn't been relevant since the 80s either. So,
you good? You good, Andy?
Yeah, we're
okay. Okay, good, good. So the last story that I had unless you really wanted to go in depth on the Jeff Baker trade
being completed. No.
Being completed, yeah. Jeff Baker was finally brought to completion. So.
someone finally finished off Jeff Baker. Yeah. Warren, I would like to point out that thank you to Ryan who tweeted this last bit of Cubs information, of news of the week, basically. No, this is not Cubs related. When we sent out the hashtag the other 15 soliciting ideas for the podcast tonight, I just want to give him credit where credit is due. So thank you, Ryan, for bringing this last tidbit of news to our attention.
Oh, right. Yeah, this last tidbit of news being Dusty Baker was extended. How was it? I worded it. He was extended shortly after having a stroke, so I don't know.
Oh,
who among us hasn't been there? for another 2 seasons, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, 2 more years.
So that I mean, granted that, I mean, he's older than, I mean, he's like, what, 70 or
he's
something,
not as old
right?
as you think.
No. He's probably 60, not even,
I think.
Yeah, 60, yeah.
Because when, I couldn't believe he was that young and already having strokes.
I mean, he was still
I don't
playing
plan on
what?
Having my first one until my mid-60s.
wasn't Baker still around in 89? I wanted, like, playing in 89?
Yeah, he played for was he back with the A's again?
That's what I want to say. Wasn't he with?
Oh, I think you're thinking of Dave Henderson.
Let's see. Dusty. Oh, it's 86. He played for the A's.
86. Okay.
Yeah, 240. Let's see. He was born. He's 63. So he's a couple years ahead of my stroke pace. But you know, Hank Aaron had his first stroke when he was 63. Dusty's just trying to keep up.
And Dusty's been stroking Hank Aaron since.
Since 1968.
So. I thought that there was a little more. I mean, it looks like it was kind of a foregone conclusion. Everybody figured he'd get his extension.
But why? Took the Giants of the World Series, and they said, "Yes, please go away."
Yeah,
take your improperly filed federal tax forms and go somewhere else, please.
And he's like, "What federal tax forms? Yeah.
Taxes?"
Him and Wesley Snipes. So I mean, now I'll admit I did not really watch much of the NLDS, because I was in Canada at the time. But did
TVs
Dusty
up there in Canada? Eight?
Oh God, no! They're only now getting the horse and buggy. So
well, it's probably the start of curling season already up there. So
you're spoiling it. That's actually going to be third segment. My experience curling. I don't know where the hell I was going with that.
So, see?
Did Dusty lose any of the games? I guess is what I was trying to get out. Was he directly to be at fault?
I think
they got swept 3 in a row at home, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First team ever to do that in a 5-game series.
Right.
So.
And losing arguably your best starting pitcher early in a game, but didn't they win that game?
Yeah, actually, I will give Dusty, although he probably wasn't the one who made the decision. I'll give him credit for the way they handled that, because when Cueto got hurt, they sent Latos down to the bullpen, and I thought we were going to have to sit around for like an hour and a half while Latos tried to get warm. But they brought a reliever in to finish that inning and pitch the next one, so Latos could get ready, because even though you tell a pitcher he's got as much time as he wants, they're just going to hurry up and try to get out there. So Latos was actually loose when he came into the game, and he pitched well. So as much as I love to mock Dusty, I think he actually handled that part of it right.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
He still batted Zach Cozart second in all 5 games, and his on-base average is well below 300. So that's a nice typical Dusty. He's a shortstop. He's got a bat at the top of the lineup.
Shortstop or second base?
Yeah, it's normally second base. Second base, bat second.
Your center fielder is supposed to lead off, and your second baseman is supposed to bat second.
Yeah. Which, how many managers actually do you think that? Like, because that seems like that is kind of generically the case. With almost every team, they lead off their center fielder, they bat their second baseman second.
Well, I mean, but if you look at like the characteristics of those positions, normally your center fielder is probably the fastest guy on the team, and if he can get on base, yeah, then that makes sense. You have a fast guy that can get on base, you lead him off. Like that would make sense to do. And like usually your second baseman is sort of like an OBP guy too, without a lot of pop. So I mean, like, if your guy's sort of stereotypically, and I don't necessarily advocate putting a guy with no pop and just high OBP batting second, but if that's kind of what you've got in your lineup, and then you put the big thumpers, the corner outfielders, and the corner infielders behind them, I mean, if that's how the cards fall, then so be it. But I think Dusty just thinks that you just make your lineup by position.
Pretty much. Here's a for you home listeners. If you're near your computer, go to dustybaker.com. It's a site trying to get you to hire him as a speaker. He has 3 video testimonials on the homepage, and they are a window into the soul of Dusty. The 3 people he picked to do the testimonials. Everybody, you know who number 1 has to be.
Hank Aaron.
Hank Aaron is of course number 1.
Mm-hmm.
I'm amazed that there's one guy missing. Joe Morgan is not here, and he's got somewhere. Joe probably didn't know how to, record one, so they couldn't
right.
put it up there. But his other 2 are Tony La Russa.
Oh.
The other one is Chris Berman.
I thought he and La Russa hated each
they
other.
They did. And that was one of the cool things about Dusty when he first came to the Cubs. In 2003, they were going to get in fights. Dusty was yelling into the dugout because the Cardinals were trying to hit Cub players.
God, I still was it a 3-game or a 4-game?
It was 5. They won 4 out of 5. That was my favorite memory of 2003. And they should have won the 5th. That was when Moises Alou, Tony Fonseca bumped the ump with his huge ass belly. There was it was very clearly, I think it was very clearly a foul ball that they called fair or whatever, vice versa, right down the left field line. Harbinger of controversial foul ball calls later on in the season. But that was one of the most fun series I've ever seen in my life, that 5 against the Cardinals. That was so cool.
That was great. Yeah.
And if you have XM or Sirius Radio and you get the baseball channel, there's a commercial they're playing all the time now, which I found the link. We'll have to somehow, we can all, I'll send it to all of us. We can put it up when we put up the podcast. Dusty has published an ebook called Dusty Baker's Hitting Handbook.
Step 1, never get on base.
That's about right. And according to this press release, there's 10 hours of audio, there's 332 pages to read, and 4 hours of video. And the best part on the video preview is Dusty is wearing what appears to be a late 70s, early 80s Giants orange jersey with just a number on it. No letters anywhere. Awesome. That dude will do anything for a nickel.
Well,
he's still trying to pay off the feds.
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say. I think he needs to. I don't think he wants to. I think he needs to.
Are you kidding? He's not reporting any of that income.
This is all under the table, right, dude? Yeah, so Dusty, you know, I know you're listening, so more power to you, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, Dusty.
Boy, I mean, even I already told you this, right? Like, I was living in San Francisco when in 2002 when they lost the World Series and they let the and the Giants let Baker go. And I don't even know who it was that was. I don't know who their columnists are, but I had a subscription to the Chronicle at the time, and on the front page of their sports section, I remember reading this guy's column about Baker being dismissed and the Cubs signing him. This must have been a couple months later or whatever. And like one of the lines that he had was something about, you know, good luck with all those young arms and the way Baker treats pitchers. And it was like, at the time I was like, oh shit. And then of course it just completely came to pass.
Well, I was down at school at the time, and in 2002, right after Dusty had been, or maybe right before the Cubs had signed him. And I, like an idiot, remember being super excited about this guy.
Oh, so was
like,
I.
Being like, and my God, even in 2003, even though you could see a lot of dumbass things happening in 2003, I didn't hate him yet because there was so much excitement in 03, but like you could even see some trouble starting to brew just the way he mismanaged that team in 03, and then of course in the playoffs, and then in 04 it was just, oh god, I hated that guy.
Yeah, 04 was just a circus. But yeah, I mean, there was the one, I don't remember I know they won, but I think Wood pitched a complete game through like 140 pitches or something crazy. Yeah, like that. Like, it's like right before or right after the All-Star break.
If you go through the pitch count, the guy he abused the most was
Sembrano.
Carlos.
Yeah.
But he did all three of those guys. He just annihilated their arms.
Yeah. It was funny. I was talking to my brother, and I don't remember where he had read this. It was either on Baseball Prospectus or Fangraphs or one of those. But apparently, like, I don't know what percentage, but a very high percentage of pitcher arm injuries occur before the age of, I want to say 24 or something like that. It's like, if you can get past that age, 24 or 25, past that, if you don't have any injuries at that point, you can basically just run it out there. Because it's like the example he was giving was Verlander, who is currently throwing like 180 pitches tonight to throw a shutout against the Yankees. He didn't have any arm injuries up to his 25 season or whatever. And now he's just like, He's thrown the most pitches over the last, I think, 5 years or something.
See,
in the majors.
Anytime anyone tries to quantify or put like a rule on that, though, I just think it's bullshit. Like every guy's different. Every arm's different. Every arm's going to react differently to the amount of stress that you can put on it. And every guy's going to be able to pitch through pain differently or not pitch through pain differently. So, like, I mean, yeah, I get guys trying to put like numbers on that, but I would hate to ever have a team think, oh, okay, well, this guy's 25, I can toss him out there for 180 pitches a night. Yeah. Like it.
Oh yeah.
See, the thing about a veteran genius like Dusty is, you know he's gonna take the situation into account though, and he's gonna know when he can save the pitcher some pitches. Like, say you're in, I don't know, maybe the second game of the league championship series, and you're up 11-0 in the fifth, and Mark Pryor is pitching.
That game ain't over, dude.
You're probably not going to make him pitch seven innings and throw 116 pitches. Oh, no, that's exactly what you're going to do. And then you're going to wonder why he runs out of gas in the eighth inning of game six.
Oh, God. This is, what, our fourth episode? I believe we've brought up that game I think in every single episode. So,
I
would just like to call out the fact that we are in fact the stereotype.
I will ask you guys a question that I've heard on the radio and that I've seen posted on a couple blogs in the past, month or so. And I have a feeling I know what the answer is to this is going to be. Is Dusty Baker a Hall of Fame manager? And like before you answer it, just think about his managerial career. Just think about the numbers of his managerial career. I should probably have called him up before I asked this question.
Well, he's never won a World Series.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
There's probably some other Hall of Fame managers that have never won a World Series, though.
It can't be too many, though.
That probably. I can't think of one, actually, now that I said.
His record's over 500 for his career.
Oh, his record's, yes, he is.
His record's got to be pretty great.
1581, 1432 losses, so it's 525 winning percentage.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good.
He's won one pennant, the 2002 Giants.
Yeah,
he's made it. Warren just said, the Reds have made what? They've won the Central three out of the last four.
Two of the last three. They sandwiched a 79 win season in between there.
I would have to say he has to win a World Series in order to be a Hall of Famer. I'm just talking strictly in terms of getting enough votes, not whether or not he deserves it.
Most of his wins have come with a completely steroid bloated corner outfielder. He got all the wins in San Francisco with Barry, and then the wins, at least the first 3 years with the Cubs, Sammy was still roided to the gills.
Oh yeah, no, he was.
Take that away.
He was a modern.
He has a little trouble.
Medicine.
He will have managed for over 20 seasons by the time this contract extension. I'm just playing devil's advocate here because I hate him and I hope that he would never be in the Hall of Fame for anything.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a popularity contest, and I mean, I don't know. Is he popular? Somebody keeps giving him jobs.
Not in San Francisco and Chicago, and right now not in Cincinnati. But other than that, probably yes. He's a cool guy to have as your manager. Until he's your manager.
Yeah.
And then it's not so cool anymore. I also think this would really work against him. If you induct him into the Hall of Fame, there has to be a safety hazard with the toothpick sticking out of the bust. Some kid is going to poke their eye out on that thing, and it's not worth that risk.
Someone's going to go in for a hug on the Dusty Baker bust and wind up losing
it. It'll be the only plaque that I'll have to show the guy's arms so you can tell he's got wristbands on.
No, he'll just have his hands up next to his face. I can't think of it. There's some famous album cover where somebody's got their hands up over their face. I don't know.
Well, at least we can wait. He can't go in until Torrey goes in because he's nowhere close to accomplishing what Torrey did. And they don't seem to be in any real hurry to get Joe in there. So it's
He's been manager of the.
There's no waiting period anymore.
Oh really?
I don't think you have to wait as a manager, do you?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I don't know with manager.
I don't think Joe Torre. You're right. Joe Torre has the resume, but Joe Torre is also a terrible manager.
yeah,
but he won four World Series with the E.
Exactly, and yeah, he absolutely has a resume, and he will be a Hall of Fame manager, but he's and that's why I bring up Dusty, because Dusty, he has some longevity stats. He's won three Manager of the Year awards. He's finished second a couple times, and he finished second in 2003 with the Cubs. He has he does have a pennant.
There's only one.
Yeah, and he will be
first and second place finishes. He's only got one pennant.
And he tricked two teams into letting them manage him for almost a decade by the end of his run with the Reds.
That's what is so weird to me, that when I saw how many, because he's managed how many years with the Reds? Five.
This was five.
How much?
It'll be seven.
This was five. Yeah. So it's like three more years than he was with the Cubs. It's almost twice as long as he was with the Cubs. That just seemed weird to me. The time passed that fast or whatever.
Thank God the Cubs are the lowest on the list of the fewest games that allowed Dusty Baker to manage. He also has, of course, the lowest winning percentage as a manager with the Chicago Cubs. That's 4 years as a Cubs.
And the lowest average finish.
Yeah.
No,
he absolutely. Did the most damage there.
The only time any of his teams ever finished in dead last was with the 2006 Chicago Cubs.
Oof. Prior to this year, that 06 team might have been the worst feeling team ever. I think it still is, actually, because it was like at the time you could tell they didn't have any kind of a plan, you know. And I'll admit I had fun in the off season between 06 and 07 while they were signing, you know, $500 million worth of contracts or whatever.
Well, Warren, the 2004 Cubs were my most hated Cub team of my entire memory. The 2012 Cubs were the worst Cub team I've ever seen in my memory, but the 2006 Cubs were the perfect storm of both of them. I definitely hate the 04 Cubs more, but the 06 Cubs had some really despicable shitheads on that team, and they were also terrible.
The only thing that redeemed the 04, that horrible stretch down the end of the season, was the last day we got to hear Chip Carey announce he was leaving.
Yeah.
The only thing that redeemed any of that. But I don't know. I take issue with you guys saying you don't think the 06 team had a plan. I mean, come on, you cannot assemble this much talent without a plan. That team had Neffy on it. It had Jock Jones and Juan Pierre. It had Freddie Bynum, Tony Womack. It had Jose Reyes on it.
Piece of shit.
Did you remember the Cubs had Jose Reyes on their team? Oh, he was a catcher.
Yeah.
Yes, that might not be the same guy. Oh, maybe the Mets converted him to shortstop, and then he became an all-star. And Will Ullman was on that team. So that was a team.
Phil Nevin. Awesome. Phil Nevin was on
Phil
that
Nevin,
team.
Phil Nevin, that's right.
He's one of my most hated Cubs.
He never played him.
John Mabry was on that team. Come on.
He would play Mabry instead of Nevin, even though Nevin was actually hitting, if I remember correctly, hitting pretty well for them.
Yeah. Better than John Mabry.
Once asked a Cub, I don't want to give completely away who it was. I asked him who the biggest asshole ever that he'd ever been around with the Cubs was, and he didn't hesitate to say Phil Nevin.
Every thing I've ever seen written about anyone. I mean, Nevin, if I remember correctly, was actually still at least had skills at the end of his career, but absolutely no one would offer him a job.
Phil is, everybody talks about when Maddox traded himself to the Dodgers. But that Greg didn't do that completely. Phil Nevin actually traded himself to the Twins. He worked out that whole deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I mean, look at Nevin. Actually, was pretty damn good with the Cubs. He had almost a .500 slugging percentage.
Yeah, in that, I remember that. That all happened. All that production happened in like one wild flurry that lasted a week. It's just like, here's the ultimate one of that. If you look at the 0-1 Cubs and you look at Fred McGriff's stats with the Cubs,
they're fine.
Well, oh, yeah.
But you remember that time
Joe Carter
didn't do it.
Right.
Yeah, Joe Carter's entire career is that. I mean, if you look at his stats, they all look okay. But, I mean, he was not a good baseball player.
Yeah, Joe Carter was definitely not a clutch hitter. Oh, wait. Except for World Series. Except for game-winning World Series home runs.
Yeah, but I mean, look at
kidding.
I know.
Because I don't.
I'm just saying. People always talk about how great Joe Carter is, and I don't know why I'm talking about Joe Carter now. But I mean, you look at his stats; they're not really that good. He was never really that top. You know, was never really a big production guy when you looked at the advanced stats.
That's why I'm glad that his announcing career totally redeemed his playing career. Oh wait. Man, was that a disaster? That's almost like it didn't happen. It was so bad.
Yeah. I don't think I listened to a single game that year. That was before MLB TV, and that was I was a very poor college freshman or whatever the hell I was that year. It was 2001 or something. So that was a thrilling end to our first segment.
That was the first segment? Oh, Jesus.
We'll have to speed it up because only two to go. Yeah. No. So the second segment, which also we're taking suggestions for the name of or possibly sponsors. I mean, I'm willing to take sponsors. So we were going to talk about.
I can get Gold Bond to sponsor this.
He could. Gold Bond medicated powder.
I think the second segment should
put
just be called.
Put some on your ass.
I think the second segment should just be called Dolan Google stuff that we've been talking about and reads about it on air.
I can do that. Joe Carter was the Cub announcer for 2 years.
Go. I can hear you typing.
There was water running on one of your things. Was one of you taking a bath?
No,
you're in the bathtub right now, aren't you?
Yeah.
I have the window open.
You're plugged in.
I have the window open because it's like 90 degrees here.
Carter was inducted into the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame in 2003. It's only him and Matt Stairs, but still it's very prestigious. Oh, and Yuppie. There's three. There's Yuppie, and there's Matt Stairs and Joe Carter. And he was eligible for the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, or I guess just the Professional Baseball Hall of Fame, in 2003. However, he only received 19 votes from 19 idiots, representing 3.8% of the vote, and was dropped from all future ballots. And all he needs now is diabetes and a couple of amputations, and then he's in. Wait, was that out loud?
Probably. I don't know. I wasn't paying enough attention. Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh. Rusty Stott is in there.
Twice. Oh, yeah, clearly.
That now while you're...
Sure, but at any rate, to reiterate, our second segment was we were going to talk about the baseball playoffs. So did either of you guys watch the one-game play-in wild card?
Yeah. I watched them.
I don't know what your take on it, on the idea of the play-in was leading up to this, but did it change any? And what is your feeling of it now?
It did.
Are you in favor?
I'm still not. I absolutely abhorred it before. I don't hate it as much now. You know, I do like the idea of having a little bit of an incentive to actually win your division, and you know that definitely did make that a thing. And you know what? And more so, not even just the one game playoff is still a stupid idea. And even if you made it a 3-game playoff, I mean, that would be slightly less stupid. You play 162 games and you get into the playoffs and it comes down to one. That's still stupid to me. I still hate the fact that there are 5-game series, frankly. But, you know, I also get that you can't play, you know, 4 rounds of 7-game series. But it's certainly more so leading up to the one game playoff. I did like the fact that a lot of teams were still in the hunt, and like you weren't seeing, you know, what the Cubs lineup was at the end of the year playing every day, because this a lot of teams still had a vested interest in actually winning and were still in it up to the end. That wouldn't have happened without those. So that was a cool thing. That was the one game playoffs. Both of them were exciting.
They were with the outfield fly rule.
Yeah.
And, I was in the. I already kind of covered this with you guys before we were recording, but I was in the airport bar waiting for my late flight to go up to Canada, watching the Braves Cardinals game, and. What was funny was that I was watching it with like, I don't know, 4 other guys, and all of them were like diehard Braves fans. And so like they were all, when it ended, they were all sad because it was the end of Chipper Jones's career. And I was angry because it meant that the Cardinals were going on. And I had like a moment of shining clarity when I realized that the Cardinals are probably going to repeat just because, you know, the universe hates me. I have to agree with you. It did add, you know, some excitement to the end of the season when they would normally be playing out.
I guess I get that there are people out there that are diehard Chipper Jones fans, but that is a ridiculous thing to me. Like, I got when Bagwell and Biggio retired from the Astros, and Chipper is that Braves kind of guy. I guess maybe it's because in 2003, when the Cubs made the DS against the Braves, and I was in school at the time, and I looked at Cubs tickets in Wrigley Field, and of course they were unavailable, and every idiot that I knew that had never watched a Cubs game in their life had come out of the woodwork somehow having a ticket, but I couldn't get one. I drove through the night. I drove to Indianapolis, stopped in Indianapolis to watch Kerry Wood's gem in game one, finished my drive, got to Atlanta at like 9 a.m. with two undergrads that just randomly were huge Cubs fans and offered to ride with me. And we sat in probably an 85% full park and watched Mike Hampton wriggle off the hook in the first inning and then the Cubs lose game two. But it just, there's no real Braves fans. Let's be honest. Like it's a transplanted team. They're so spoiled by success. I don't know if you guys noticed.
I think that's more to the point that they are spoiled. Because I actually, one of my fairly close friends from college, a big Braves fan. But I mean, I think every single team has at least one or two.
Do you
guys
think people were really going even those early, that park was packed even in the early 90s when they started their stretch of spoiling their fans? I don't think so. And actually, I don't know if you guys noticed, I tweeted this out a couple days ago. Go on MLB.com. You can buy a ticket to any of the upcoming championship games in any park.
Can you even
absolutely
in St.
Tigers,
Louis?
I thought they were saying
absolutely
the greatest fans in the world.
At least tickets showed as available. The ticket icon, and I clicked. I don't know if I did specifically click on St. Louis, but the first two that I clicked on, and I think it was Yankee Stadium, and I think Detroit. And I was able to buy, I think, 12 tickets together in Detroit, and I think six Yankees best available. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, because they were saying tonight, at least on the radio broadcast I was listening while driving this evening, they were saying that it was a standing room only at Tiger Stadium.
Well, maybe they bought them.
I mean, it was the Tigers broadcast, so I don't know. But they were using it as an example of how much better Tigers fans were than
possible that MLB.com was mistaken, but I was pretty sure that I could have bought seats in a large majority of the sections pretty comfortably in any of those upcoming games.
Yeah. Well, what was your take, Andy, on the I don't know if you ever wrote anything about what the
I didn't watch either game out of protest, but I like them. I was detained. I was not allowed to watch them. The holding cell I was in did not have a TV, or it had TV, but didn't have cable. And because they were on TBS, we didn't get to watch them. We did get to watch Pawn Stars, and that's on cable. I don't know how that worked. I don't mind the idea, although I know what's going to happen. I know that like in 2 years, the Cubs are going to be really good, and they're going to win like 100 games, and the Cardinals are going to win 101, so the Cubs are going to be the wild card team, and they're going to play the Marlins, who won 68 games and had somehow had the best record of any non-division winner, and the Cubs are going to lose, and their season will be over.
Yeah.
I have more of a problem with the fact that they couldn't figure out how to fix the league division series, and they had that ridiculous two games at the home field advantage was the last three games of the series, although I did think it was hilarious that the Reds had it all set up for them and then blew it. I don't mind. I like the extra playoff team just because it keeps more teams in it. And when, you know, the Cubs hardly ever contend, it'll give us a chance. Yay! We're five out with six to go. We still might win. So I don't have a problem with it. But the reason they have it is because Bud he just loves the 163rd game. He thinks that's like the greatest thing ever. And these games will never have that kind of intensity just because one of the teams wrapped
it up like two weeks
ago. And where the 163rd game, chances are one team found out like when the Cubs played in it. They lost the game in Houston and they were slumping their way back to the clubhouse. And then Neffy hit the home run in Colorado to beat the Giants. And all of a sudden the Cubs were alive again.
Glorious.
And hey, we got a game tomorrow. You can't replace that, I don't think. And one of these years, they're going to have a complete cluster where they're going to have like four teams finished with the same record, and they're going to have to somehow play all that crap off and then start the playoffs. But I actually like chaos like that. So I'm not opposed to it.
The hilarity of it too, Dolan, is that of all seasons to institute this ridiculous one-game playoff, you pick the season after the greatest ending in an MLB regular season history. Because, like, no one can deny it. As much as I fucking hate the Cardinals, that last day of baseball in 2011 was the greatest day of baseball in the history of the game. And, like, I refuse to accept any argument to the contrary to that, because that was the most exciting, crazy day of baseball. Everything that broke in a crazy direction, or everything that could break in a crazy direction, broke in a crazy direction. It was such an exciting day of baseball. I was watching MLB TV or whatever, the MLB Network, that entire night, watching the replay, watching the Longoria walk-off replay. I mean, it was just a crazy night of baseball.
Yeah, that was pretty nice.
Yeah, and so, Dolan, I agree with you. Like, that is destroyed by this for all intents and purposes. I mean, not that that still couldn't happen to decide the wild card, but it's more diluted now, and it's less likely to happen.
There would have been an extra game this year. The A's and the Orioles would have had to play to see who got the other wild card spot.
True.
So really, they added one game by doing it. And in typical fashion, it's the only reason the Cardinals made the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so if they win the pennant and or the World Series, it's all Bud's fault. And so I think we go to Milwaukee and burn down his hotel or wherever the hell he lives in.
I assume it's a crypt.
Yeah. So he eats a hot dog and gets his hair cut every day. So it's got to be swanky.
It's got to be in good shape. Yeah. So now, did you guys think it – do you think there's any connection between the extending of the playoffs and the fact that they're having a hard time selling out, at the very least, the NLDS, and looks like the championships series.
Well, in Detroit,
also,
I'm guessing everyone's so excited about the Lions' hot start that they aren't paying any attention to the Tigers.
Wow, they won't let you use. You can't buy a ticket with food stamps. Makes it tough for some of them.
I'm the bad guy. They've suffered.
You got a lot of food stamp fans in the audience.
They've suffered so much up there, Andy. No, I'm kidding. Fuck Detroit.
Oh, they're selling out. The Tigers are fine. They're all fired up about the Tigers. Even though, really, of all the fans, they were the ones who should have been lulled to sleep during the season, because what's probably going to turn out to be the best team in the American League didn't do squat for the first 4 months.
Rope-a-dope, man. Rope-a-dope.
Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame update.
Oh, excellent.
There's a current Cub who wears a uniform on the field every game who is in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. Can you name him?
Dale Swaim?
Nope, not Dale, but sure. It's on his coaching staff.
I don't think I can name anybody on Dale Swaim's coaching staff right now.
Because they fired half of them.
They only fired Pat Listach. Dave McKay is in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame because he was born in Vancouver, British Columbia. Yeah, and he actually played for the Blue Jays for a while.
Is Gagne in there?
They're waiting for the whole steroid thing to blow over.
They have standards in the Canadian Baseball
Noted Canadian Hall of Fame. Roberto Alomar is in the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame.
Well, and like Larry Walker and all that stuff, but I'm sure anyone can Google that if anyone cared about this.
You want me to just name them all?
No.
Wait, there's only like 80 of them.
All right. You're already at like 35 of them.
Yeah. All right, so are we done with playoff news? Do you guys want to talk about the holiday slide at all? What were your takes were on that? I think basically it was dirty and
a little Marco Scudero, or as Chip Carey called him for an entire Cubs A's homestand one time, Marco Scutaro. Because why would the play-by-play announcer actually properly pronounce the names of the players?
Well, it's a nice
charming
little
old drunken
because
grandpa.
Chip. Carre.
Yes.
I'm more. Yeah, like, dirty, I guess I think the biggest dirty
is just as dirty as when Holiday did it to Starlin last year.
Yeah.
But really, obviously, the biggest news of the postseason so far is not the biggest, but the Derek Jeter injury is the real ESPN has at least informed me that that is the biggest news of the postseason, is Derek Jeter not playing in a Yankee postseason game for the first time since 1995. Well, since 1996 postseason.
He had to call in supermodel reinforcements to help him keep that thing elevated.
Yeah.
That thing.
And his ankle, too.
Yeah.
So here's the trivia question. Do you guys know who started for the Yankees at shortstop tonight?
That's what they should have said. A-Rod, you're not playing third tonight. You're going to play shortstop again.
What? Well, he didn't even play third. They benched him.
Yeah, Chavez was also not in the game. So, right?
According to, because I have the live.
Oh, I'm sorry. Swisher was not in the in the game.
Yeah. Even though I think now, do either of them have a hit? Because Robinson Cano doesn't, and he's started.
Well, I thought not in the series, but I thought Cano had like two hits in the postseason. It was just on like a 25, whatever.
Yeah, he went over 25 at one point. I thought it wasn't
so,
in the series.
So, back to my question, does anyone know who started at shortstop for the Yankees? No, yeah. It was Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah. They had to add him to the roster when they took Jeter off of it.
So there you go. There's your trivia tidbit of the day. Yeah, because I
maybe that'll win you a drink.
I don't think
somewhere.
I could have named the backup. I couldn't have named. I did not know Lance Nix was on the team. For example, I mean, you just.
I didn't know Lance Nix was. Jason.
It's not Lance.
Jason Nix. You don't expect to turn on a Yankee game and not see Derek Jeter at shortstop.
Yeah. Did you actually see the one angle of the? There was like a wire service photograph of Jeter from like the third base line, kind of when he had done that. There was actually quite a considerable kind of left turn in the middle of his shin. So it was quite a visible break.
Ah, poor guy.
He'll have to keep it keep it elevated on his stacks and stacks of money.
I hope we can afford medical insurance in this America.
Might be out of here.
Okay, so I think we're going to call it. That's the end of the second segment. We have our third and final and probably finally segment, also known as Andy recommends something on Netflix. Andy, take it away.
Well, how many of these have we done? Andy? Three? I think I was Four. Universally lauded for my second choices.
I didn't say it was a bad.
So I'm going to go back to that well, because they have added the second series of Sherlock on Netflix. So I can go watch that.
Oh, there you go.
And the other one is I was explaining to one of my friends who I ran into when I was in Milwaukee last weekend, because I love to go to Milwaukee in October because it's windy and cold.
You just like spanning the Great Lakes.
Every episode of Cheers ever is on Netflix. So.
Oh, Chuck just got an enormous erection. If you let him know that MASH is also available, maybe TJ Hooker.
He'll sign up for a second Netflix account. Just watch it on two TVs at the same time.
Oh, Lordy. Well, that's a good recommendation.
That's everybody's homework, then. Is to watch all 13 seasons. Oh, I know what the reason I want to bring up Cheers was on GQ.com, because I love to read GQ. they have an oral history of Cheers, which is awesome. So, and they even call out some specific episodes. So read the oral history. If a couple of them think, I don't remember that one, and then you can go on Netflix and watch that episode. You'll be better off for it.
You'll be a better person.
I'm gonna get behind your last few recommendations. Because Cheers actually kind of holds up too. I mean, you know
funny.
Yeah,
it's well written.
Cheers holds up.
One-liners never get old. Come on, that's basically all George went
in the oral history. They actually talk about how at one point the writers stopped having Norm come into the bar. Because they had run out of one liners. Oh. They just started scenes with him already sitting at the end of it because they didn't. They're like, oh God, if we have him walk in, we got to come up with another one. Just have him sit at the end of the bar.
One of my favorite Cheers moments, because I actually really liked that, enjoyed the finale despite the Diane nonsense. But one of my favorite Cheers lines, Norm lines, came from that finale. he's when he and Sam are the last two left in the bar, and Norm's getting up to walk out, and he like, you know what I really love, Sam, and Sam's like, beer, Norm, and Norm's like, sure, I'll have another. it was such a great misdirection of both of their lines, and I totally enjoyed Cheers.
It's like when he walks in and Woody goes, how you doing, Mr. Peterson? He goes, poor. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. No, poor.
Poor. Yeah. Yeah. One of the other ones that always stuck in my head was when he walked in and Woody or Coach was like, hey, what's up? It must have been Woody because he was like, hey, what's up, Mr. Peterson? And he's like, my nipples, it's freezing out there. Now I might watch a couple episodes, Dolan. Good recommendation.
Yeah.
One of my early, no, I shouldn't say early, one of my memories of living in Chicago, especially because I did grow up on South Side, South Suburbs or whatever. My dad he worked for the railroad, so you'd always get a lot of free tickets and whatnot from the salesmen that were trying to get him to buy, you know, train parts or whatever. And so we went to at Old Comiskey Park, went to a game and wound up on, like, I don't know, fourth row box seats. And I was like 7 or 8 or 8 or 9 or something. And George Wendt actually threw out the first pitch. Okay. And I actually remember that because he like threw it into the upper deck behind home plate, like rather than throw it to the catcher. He like chucked it into the upper deck and then like pantomimed that he blew his arm out and was like rolling around. I remember as a kid, you're just like, oh, that's hilarious.
Well, my little George Wendt name dropping moment, I briefly work with a guy who is, George Wendt may be relevant again, because I briefly work with a guy who is pitching the guy is a stand-up comic who's pitching a show with George Wendt. He pitched it out in LA, of course, about an Irish Catholic, I'm sure, Irish Catholic family in Chicago, and it's centered around like a health club, like a sitcom around a health club. So if that ever comes out, you heard it here first. I might have just violated an NDA.
Nothing says health club comedy like George Wendt. Like,
yeah, I kind of
or just Chicago Catholics.
Yeah,
too,
it was a little. It was. I didn't quite understand exactly where it was going, but I mean, it's going to be centered around this Irish Catholic family, and the Cheers setting instead of a bar is going to be, most of the action is going to take place in a gym, if it ever comes to fruition. So hopefully we'll see George Wendt back on television in the near future, because I would like that.
Yeah, yeah, he was one of the highlights of that long running show. Kerm, what was your entry for our third segment, our non-baseball segment?
I guess if I haven't, I don't remember if I already recommended this, but I've just been playing Borderlands 2 for the past month. Came out September 18th. Okay. I'm still playing the hell out of it. It's still awesome. They just had some DLC come out with their newest character, their Mechromancer character. So if you've already played through the other four characters, you've got some new...
Some extra playing
to level
to
up. And the DLC, there's a new like Crimson Booty or something, some pirate DLC I think came up today, or which I haven't gotten around to yet, but it will be I'm sure it will be more of the same fun guns and leveling up and action. And since Dolan got to do too, this is also now kind of becoming an older game, but if you haven't picked up Rock Band Blitz for $15, $10 or $15 from the PlayStation Network or the Xbox Live Arcade, it gives you 25 extra songs if you're still playing Rock Band that you can import into your Rock Band 3 or whatever.
Did they ever, because I haven't played Rock Band since like 2007 or 2008, I can't remember when, because I never had the instruments. My brother had the instruments, but then he moved.
That's away. Well, that happens so to he lots moved, of he bands. Moved, moved to that might
yeah, we broke up.
The guy with the drum set moved away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, basically, he moved down to San Francisco, and
Rock Band Blitz is right up your alley, because you actually don't play with instruments; you just play it with the controller, like the directional pad and the button, the A button, are your notes, and you actually play all the instruments by shifting around to these different music tracks that represent the vocals and the bass guitar, lead guitar, drums, and what else do they have? Keyboard. And so you actually move around these different tracks. There's these different power ups, and they have Jesse's Girl, and we've been waiting for Jesse's Girl on Rock Band for forever.
Were they ever able to get? Oh shit! What the hell's I was trying to think of the 80s song that has the great guitar solo, but I can't remember.
You might have to be slightly more specific.
80s song with the great guitar solo.
I believe it was by a hair band.
I think it was. You know. No, there's
Come
the
On
band
Eileen
that did
by Dixie's Midnight Runners.
Dolan, that's a weird, because actually, ironically, Come On Eileen by Save Ferris just got released as Rock Band DLC. Somehow they did not manage to get the Dixie's Midnight Runners version of that, which seems an oversight.
I think I rented a movie once called Come On Eileen.
I saw it. It was, you know, the plot was terrible. Special effects.
Who the hell rents porn, Dolan?
Oh, it was a porno?
Dire Straits.
Oh, Dire Straits. I don't think there is any Dire Straits actually on there.
No, well, because the one song that I'm thinking of, which Money for Nothing would have been a great Rock Band song, but the lyrics are just like you just couldn't put it on kid friendly game. Yeah, because they're just not. They're just not nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, so that's cool. So, the only things that I could really suggest, like I said, I spent a week in, or not a week, like half a week or so, 4 days in, up in Vancouver visiting family. It was, actually, Canadian Thanksgiving when I was up there. So I wound up going to three different Thanksgiving dinners, which are basically the same as Thanksgiving.
What the hell do Canadians have to be thankful for?
I think it actually stems from the exact same thing.
They're like, thankful for Ryan Dempster and Celine Dion. Yeah.
What's funny is that I was talking to various Canadians, and they're like, well, you know, Thanksgiving's not a big deal up here, really. You know, we get together and whatnot. But I mean, like, Thanksgiving in the States, that's like bigger than Christmas for you guys, right? And I'm like, not really. I don't think. Is that really a thing? I don't, because I had two different people at two different Thanksgiving dinners say that to me. So I don't know what they think of the U.S. in general. I don't know. Two things I can recommend. First being curling. I actually went curling. My uncle-in-law is the, he's actually the
curling commissioner.
I guess right now he's he is, and
the
curling
Canada.
Club. He's the vice president right now, but next season he's going to be the president of their local.
He's actually a scab curling referee.
So he was showing us how to curl. We had the ice all to ourselves, it is actually a lot of fun. Although I realized that night when I was looking at my knees and elbows that, you know, it takes a little bit of doing to get your stability when you're on the ice, like doing that slide thing, because I was just a mass of bruises, like head to toe.
Not even lying when you said that, I actually had to look and see if I could even look at my elbow without a mirror, and I can sort of.
Oh, I can't. I don't. I was looking at
if the bruise was big enough, I could definitely see it on my elbow.
Yeah, my right knee was like just a solid mass of purple, like the entire knee. when my brother asked me how what it was like, I described curling as basically doing a squat lift, basically. So you're doing a squat lift and then the splits followed by playing darts on ice. So that would be kind
good.
Of
that, that'll,
like.
I'll put those all into my training routine then.
Yeah, there you go. But I recommend it if you can find a place where you can curl. It's actually a lot of fun.
That's why the Canadians, their training regimen is P90. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Huh? Pretty good. Huh?
Yeah.
Does. All right. Yeah. Thanks. I'm out.
Well. Good night.
Okay, everybody. Leave it on a high note.
Good night, everybody. So then the only other thing I could recommend is poutine.
Now, is it really poutine? I thought it was pronounced Poutsin. Because I thought somebody corrected me when I tried to call it poutine, and they're like, "No, it's Poutsin." But if
It might be on the East Coast, up in Vancouver. It's primarily a Montreal thing. So,
but if you were around people who were actually saying it, I'm sure they were probably correct.
Yeah, but everybody up in Vancouver, for the most part, with some exceptions, everybody basically sounds like they're from, you know, San Francisco or whatever. They don't have a heavy accent. Some of them have an incredibly heavy accent, but they're usually people that moved from Ontario or something.
And okay, so what is poutine, for those who have no idea?
It's French fries with beef gravy and cheese curds.
What's not?
I'd never actually had it before. Exactly, right? It's
what's not to like? Just the emergency room visit afterwards.
It's like you don't want to.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. This is true. So it's tasty stuff. It definitely. I'm in the process of trying to find a place around here that serves it. So I can recommend that. And then I guess the third thing, the book I read when I was on vacation was The Devil in the White City.
Oh, yeah.
Was it's the story of the 1892 Columbian Exposition or Exhibition. I can't remember which word. Basically, the 1892 World Fair, Chicago World's Fair.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
And I heard the sequel's really pretty good too. And the name escapes me, but by that author. Nah, it's not a sequel, but the next book that is sort of along that same vein by that author.
Eric Larson.
We're doing book,
yes,
book recommendations?
Yeah, this just got super highbrow.
Well, I've got one for
go.
It just came out today. Okay. Mark Bowden, who wrote Black Hawk Down and Killing Pablo, wrote a book about the mission to kill Osama bin Laden. It's called The Finish.
You finish it in one day, Dolan, or you're just recommending a book willy-nilly?
I'm buying it. I read the extended excerpt in Vanity Fair this month. Because I get Vanity Fair because I'm a fancy, fancy man.
You're reading GQ, you're getting Vanity Fair.
Yep. I've never met you in person, Dolan, but when I do, I really hope that you're like wearing like a Brooks Brothers suit.
Yeah,
you see
his waffle hair.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got weekday and weekend ascots.
It's pronounced coif in Canada, not quaff.
And you put gravy on it.
Okay, well, I don't think we can top that. So with that, we are going and gone.